This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow. Live from Twin Peaks on Kirby, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, one in the books, two to go. Still 2 hours of the big show as we start hour number two right now. It is Nick with me at Twin Peaks 59 in Kirby as Barry is in Wichita, Kansas, getting ready to do a little comedy, but he will join us via the Comrex tomorrow for an F Yeah Friday as we roll through here. But stop by and see us 59 in Kirby, like our good friend Pink Valkyrie. Christina's here. We appreciate her. She was fantastic. She brought a whole bunch of stuff for the baby and diapers and gifts and things that Lisa and
she has.
We appreciate it.
She is awesome. What did she? What did she bring you?
A bunch of stuff from like stuff for not only the baby but for Taylor and Dr. Dre on 290. Shout out for the incredible hat, the Bun B Astros hat, and then she got a bunch of diapers too. So
have we revealed the delivery date or about approximately?
It's going to be a Halloween baby.
Oh, okay.
Lisa is having. She had a C-section the last time, so you have to have another.
Okay.
So it's scheduled to be a Halloween baby. It's going to be a girl. And we'll wait a little bit before we do the actual name reveal, but it is official. The reason why I know that is because we narrowed it down to two, and I did give her my first and second choice. I didn't have another discussion with her. And then Amazon started delivering a whole bunch of things for the wall and blankets and things that had her name on it. And I went, well, I guess that's official then. So at least then she can't change her mind, because last time, Taylor was not Taylor until 3 days before she was born. Taylor had a different name, and I was convinced that was the right name. And she woke up on a different side of the bed one day. Suddenly, she was Taylor.
Nothing wrong with Taylor. I like that. As long as it's not a bad name, because you know Barry's going to let you know.
Yeah, believe me.
Speaking of Barry, wouldn't it be funny if, because he's being connected via fancy technology from Wichita, Kansas, because he's got a comedy gig in Kansas, right? That we feature one of the comics that are being featured in Kansas and not Laminack. How would he feel about that?
I'm sure he wouldn't take kindly to it. I'm sure there
just
would be
come out
objections,
with
possible phone
calls. Not
even
calls from the guy
made.
That they feature, like someone that's just like emceeing it, basically.
Yeah, that's going to go
he
over.
He would be angry.
That's pretty much going to go over like a fart in church. I don't think it's going to.
No, but Barry's going to be back.
It's
going to
be a smelly situation. It's not going to be very popular.
As he usually does via fancy technology. So this is just a one-time thing. But you can come to Twin Peaks.
Anytime he's out of town, you know I just prefer to have my man Nicholas next to me.
I appreciate that. It's always fun doing it. It's always fun doing it. And the Blitz, they're obviously going to be here.
Yeah.
And they'll do the show all the way till 7, so I'll be here till 7 as well. That means I'm probably going to be late or we'll miss the Rockets season opener, and that's something we haven't gotten into.
Don't do that. The opponent is all world.
They're playing your Bucks, bro.
The Milwaukee Bucks.
Antetokounmpo. Antetokounmpo.
It's close. You're overdoing the T's.
No, I'm not. That's how you say it.
It's Antetokounmpo.
You sound like you're saying a D.
You're doing like a machine gun.
It's Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo. You can do it a little bit, but Antetokounmpo is a little too much. Just soften the T's. Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo.
Better. Right there.
Antetokounmpo.
Leave it right there.
All right, I'll stop.
Because you know there's people on ESPN that are cowards that just call them the freak right away, or the Greek freak. You're chickening out. That means just tell them you don't know how to say it.
Barring injury, knocking wood, and I genuinely mean this.
Did you just tap yourself in the crotch?
Antetokounmpo is going to have an amazing year this year, I believe. An amazing year. I think he's going to have one of the best years that he's had since being in the NBA. I'm not going to say ever, like over his career, because he obviously is going to grow.
Wait, you're saying Giannis is going to have another good year?
Like an amazing year. I think it's going to be
is that really that big of a limb to go out on, because he won the MVP last year? So you're telling me he's going to win the MVP again?
I don't know if he'll win the MVP, but just because you don't win the MVP doesn't mean you didn't get better. Because sometimes someone else has a better year.
The only way he can get better is when he starts to develop a consistent jump shot and a three-point shot.
Right, and I think that's what he's been working on all offseason. At least that's what he's been saying, right? The jump shot?
I haven't heard him. I hope he has. I don't know.
I mean, I would imagine that's what you're supposed to do. I mean,
to do that, but we all know that the Kardashians work in weird ways. James Harden one summer was supposed to work on a bunch of stuff. Instead, he worked on reality TV, and look where that got him. So you're supposed to, but what you're supposed to and what you do are different things.
I'll be a Harden defender here, only because I feel like it's harder to motivate an NBA player to work on the offseason on defensive issues as opposed to offensive issues. I mean, if he works so on his jump shot, he's going to have more fun playing basketball.
You're more motivated to work on a one-foot side fadeaway Dirk Nowitzki three than you are your defensive prowess.
I think that's a perfect example for my argument. The fact that we've been talking about Harden's one-step move basically the entire offseason, have we not?
Well, a lot of people, yeah. I mean, we know he's working on it.
I'm not going to sit here and say that James Harden hasn't been working on his defense. I'm just going to say that that is definitely one thing he's been working on is the offensive move. Why wouldn't the Greek Freak do the same, especially coming off an MVP season?
You know, and they all played internationally this summer in the World Championships and things like that. So, I mean, there were opportunities to work on things. But I think that, to your point, it's just how motivated are you? I mean, we talked about this time and time again. There are guys in the NBA that just don't like basketball that much. They just know they're making money at it. But you get the other guys that can't get enough of it. And they're driven by the fact that, like Kobe Bryant, like others, that said, you know what? I don't care if I'm even considered an all-star. I want to be the greatest of all time. When I'm the greatest of all time, I want to be the best ever. And so every single opportunity every year, whether they got to pay someone to work with them like Akeem Olajuwon, or they just got to get in the gym and continue to work on their craft, they're going to do it nonstop. Those are the kind of guys you build franchises around. Because those are the kind of guys that don't know how to stop. James can be that guy, and at times, because of offensively, he loves the fact that people are considering him one of the greatest offensive talents of all time. But I think, to your point, to be a respected, all well-rounded player in the upper echelon of all-time great players, you got to play both ends of the floor.
I totally agree. Now, Harden obviously has been able to, I don't know if I want to say get away, because he hasn't won the championship yet. But at the very minimum, he's been able to prove himself as one of the greats, purely just working and adapting and evolving his offense. We saw in the preseason that he hasn't necessarily been – I see. I just looked at your screen. Yeah. It threw me off. But we've seen that he's been able to adapt offensively. In the preseason, we pointed out a few things that we thought were going to be a concern going into the regular season, and that's when Russell Westbrook starts playing ISO.
But here's the thing, Nick. At this point in his career, it isn't even about what else James Harden could add to his repertoire. It's how can he adapt his game to let others be a part of it so that the team can achieve more? Because that's where the shortcomings have come, in team results, in playoff victories, in getting to a finals. And now you add a guy that's been an MVP in the last 3 years to your squad. That's your homeboy. That's your buddy. That's supposed to be better than your relationship with Chris Paul. But that's why I'm holding out passing judgment on this team, because we've been down this road before. He and Chris Paul were friends. Look how it ended. I don't know how these two are going to be able to coexist on the floor for 82 games. I have a lot of reservations. And I need to see who's going to play what roles and how they're going to get others involved. Otherwise, instead of evolving, I think they're taking a step back.
Well, look, I respect the fact that you're going to reserve. You don't want to pass judgment because you want – look, honestly, I've always been a guy that I want to see 20 games. I want to see 20 games to see whether or not Carmelo Anthony was going to be a success. Honestly, I didn't need to see 20 games about
– That's your sample size.
But I think that's a sample size, especially when you consider how good Russell Westbrook has been from an offensive standpoint. He's taken a step back in maybe one season in terms of statistics. But from an offensive standpoint, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I mean, here's the other thing, though. From a team perspective overall, I like their roster. This year it isn't square pegs and round holes. This year is adding guys that know the system and are going to fulfill their roles. You need shooting on this team. So Ryan Anderson's been there, done that, and he doesn't have to do too much. But when you're open, knock down a shot, right? Eric Gordon, knock down your shots. You signed him long-term. The guys you brought in to come off the bench, Thabo Sefolosha is a guy that plays defense, that is familiar with both those guys, played with them in OKC, and knows how to play with those two guys. You need guys that understand the system, their roles, and if they're open, they knock down shots. So you don't have Michael Carter-Williams, and you don't have James Ennis, and you don't have guys that have 25-letter alphabets with no J in them. That's the kind of players you need on this roster. It's just how do they all mesh together.
But going back to what you were talking about earlier, the relationship, the fact that Chris Paul and James Harden were friends, and then obviously that relationship didn't turn out too great
right, come
the end of the season. I've always been – who's the guy that's been always saying that? Like when we were talking about LeBron James and Greg Popovich, and everybody says Greg Popovich and LeBron James are friends. I'm telling you right now, LeBron James – I said it last season, the season before. LeBron James and Greg Popovich would have been a disaster. The fact that Greg Popovich runs the team the way he does, and LeBron essentially does it like a coach or a GM in any team that he joins – would have been an absolute conflict. And that's why when people say, oh, these two guys are friends, they're going to be great when they play or when they work with each other.
But come Nick, don't you feel it's a respect factor? I think it would have worked because, simply put, both of them are basically considered one of the greatest of all time at their given profession. Popovich coaching, LeBron playing. So there's a built-in respect. So that's why I would think it would work, because LeBron's going to – and we've seen this. He's going to walk all over any coach he doesn't respect, and or he's going to handpick a guy that he knows is never going to get in his kitchen, and is who, never going to give him a hard time, and is going to let him do whatever he wants.
And who would that be? Which coach has he absolutely respected that he did not absolute run? If he respected him, he didn't run him. And name one coach.
That's the thing. If he
has it.
If he
there's has not
it,
one coach.
Well, and the guys that have tried it didn't last long because of the fact that he had more power than they did. But that's totally different than Greg Popovich. If you bring in Greg Popovich, and with his rep, and LeBron, you can see it. He clearly respects him as it is. But when you respect him and you realize if you're bringing him into a situation where he's probably making more than your average coach, he has more control than your average coach.
Sure.
Those are 100%. All factors that make LeBron kind of have to scale it back a little bit.
Yeah, well, look, Kawhi Leonard, now he's won, what, how many championships?
Two.
And he's been known to be this, like some people say he's really not an introvert. He just comes off as an introvert. But he's always been, he's always come off as this guy that's easy to work with, flexible to himself. And that's the reason why you would think he would be a perfect fit for Greg Popovich. What happened? To a certain extent, Kawhi Leonard.
Well, his uncle happened in part too, because an injury happened, and then everybody had their 2 cents.
But to say that Leonard's and Popovich's relationship did not at least get shaky because of everything regarding his injury would absolutely be false. Is that safe to say?
Fair, yeah, yes.
And absolutely. Look, and he's a star. He's gonna go. He's probably a top five player.
But here's the thing. So what are you telling me? Because Mike D'Antoni's been in the league a long time, but I don't think he has that nearly what the respect level that Popovich has. And you've got two guys that have been very demonstrative with separate franchises in my way or the highway.
But D'Antoni,
James runs the Rockets, and there's no second guessing that. That is James's entire franchise, front office, coach, whatever. He makes every decision. Russell did the same thing with OKC. Now, where's the give and where's the take, and who gives and takes at the right time when it's those two guys, and that is your franchise.
Yeah, and I think LeBron could have come to Houston if he had wanted to. I never felt like he wanted to come to Houston. And
I totally agree with that.
And he would have been able to run Mike D'Antoni. And I think it's going to be a similar dynamic. I'm not saying Mike D'Antoni has no say whatsoever. But now you've got Russell Westbrook and James Harden. I just think if you figure out the ISO situation, that dynamic is going to exist anyway, considering what the front office is. As long as Daryl Morey is there and Tad Brown is there, I'm not saying it's a bad thing and they should get rid of him. I'm just saying that's the dynamic that exists. It's not a situation where you have a coach and he has that much influence like Greg Popovich does with the front office in San Antonio. That's all I'm saying. So
you think it's going to work with these two guys?
I don't necessarily believe it's going to work. I just want to see how they handle ISO. That's my whole point. I'm okay with you reserving judgment until 20 games in. I'm actually okay with
you're
that.
You're a wrestling fan?
Absolutely not.
You ever seen how they do tag teams?
I do.
One guy does it, then he touches the other guy's hand, then he does it.
Yeah.
There's your ISO.
Well, I mean, that's kind of that was the dynamic that existed with Chris Paul.
Well, you got 20 games and starts tonight with game number one, so we can start to review and reflect on what's going on with the Rockets. The season opener is at Toyota Center tonight down there on Polk Street. So it's a good one to watch, especially with no World Series. It's Bucks, it's Rockets, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow, I'm sure, as long as Barry approves. But we're going to continue to roll on with a lot of stuff to talk about here. Still people chiming in a lot about the World Series and other topics. If you got something in your mind you want to get off your chest, 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, hit us on Twitter. It's Hour 2 of the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Get the latest and best content on where to go, what to do, where to eat, and where to drink. Go to culturemap.com. This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow. Live from Twin Peaks on Kirby, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Barry's out, Nick's in as we roll through hour number two of The Suspects on ESPN 97.5. A beautiful crowd here at Twin Peaks. 59 and Kirby, you should be here too. We're here till 4. Blitz is here till 7. Promo team's got all kinds of goodies when they're not feeding their faces full of all of the made-from-scratch menu
items.
You
love to tease them about that.
They asked us if it was okay to start a tab. And we were like, I mean, sure, if you want to. Then the waitresses kept coming to us going, did you order this? Did you order that? We're like, no.
Yeah,
no,
like on the air, no. They're like, did you order this? I'm like, nope.
Then we look back at the promo team, and they've got like a freaking a la carte spread like it's a buffet. And it's like you're supposed to be handing out T-shirts and shaking hands and kissing babies. All you're doing is making sure you're smacking your lips after eating the food.
I'm actually okay with this promo. Well, half of this promo team, because one of them always wears a Suspects T-shirt.
Yep.
And the other one always wears
John and
Del Rahil and Lance T-shirt, even when it's a Suspects remote. But he's an all right guy. I like one half of this promo team. He knows exactly who I'm talking about.
I do, because I have the visuals of knowing that they came over here already. So with all that being said,
I guess we can do more Rockets before we do a little non-sports. But is there anything else that you wanted to share in terms of the season opener between the Rockets and your Milwaukee Bucks?
No, I mean, look, here's what I like the most. Looking forward to the NBA. And we tease a lot, and obviously Barry says that the NBA season doesn't start till Christmas Day, and you and I have a different opinion of that. But what I'm most excited about, not just from a Rockets perspective, from an NBA perspective, is it isn't the Warriors and the one team that may be able to push them. It's 5 to 7 teams that have a legit chance to win the championship this year if all goes well. We saw the Clippers and the Lakers the other night. The fact that the Clippers were able to win without PG-13 and beat the Lakers sent an early message.
Oh,
but there
sure.
are going to be plenty of messages sent. I want to see who everybody said this Milwaukee team improved. I mean, they still lost Malcolm Brogdon. I want to see where they are. And so from a night-in, night-out basis, instead of going, well, there's two teams that might be a good matchup, but they don't have a chance, I like the fact that on any given night, you're watching a Utah or a Denver or a Portland or Philly or all these different teams that legit have a chance to compete for a title.
Yeah, and I look, we talked about it before. Adam Silver probably wanted this. He probably wanted this situation where it's more of a level playing field, and the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets and whichever team LeBron is on is not always in the discussion. We kind of got tired of that narrative. It got old. So it's good to see these two-star teams, especially all over the Western Conference, being spread out, because it does make it more difficult. The thing that, and I know you didn't want to, you know, you don't necessarily believe in the duo that is Russell Westbrook and James Harden just yet. You're reserving judgment.
Yeah.
But this is a challenge that's going to be posed across the five teams that you're talking about. There's a bunch of two-star teams.
5 or 7 teams. But here's the thing, Nick. This is why it's so important, because those 7 teams have 2 superstars, right? They have quality players. So now it becomes, who's your third best player and how good are they? Because you may judge a team, and a team may be better than another team, because it's not about who's the best tandem. It's who are your complementary players, like I was talking about, and not square pegs and round holes. Who are your complementary players, and who has the best, like for the Lakers? Kuzma hasn't played yet.
Right.
He's probably the third best player. So you don't know who they are just yet. Clippers, you haven't had your second best player, but you know that all the role players stepped up huge to get you a big win early in the season, so you know that they're deep.
Right. I think the tandem, though, it's fair to say that you want your tandem to mesh well before the third and the fourth player.
It's essential if you're the Rockets.
Right. And look, maybe that tandem is you know, the success or the momentum that's being created by a particular two-star tandem is being interrupted once that third player becomes healthy. Example, the Los Angeles Lakers, when Kuzma becomes healthy, does that ruin anything that's going on between Anthony Davis and LeBron James? I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Right.
But you're right. That it's still a challenge regardless. And look, we still have to see if Paul George and Kawhi can play together. LeBron
True.
And Anthony Davis can play together. James Harden and Russell Westbrook can play together. All of those teams have to start with that tandem doing well first. And if they do, then we can start talking about some of these. A lot of these teams are not healthy. A lot of these teams are not healthy, and the Lakers are one of them.
So instead of saying it's the Warriors to lose, and we're talking about all this, I'll give you the two keys that I've already told you privately to watching this entire season of who's going to win the title. One is, who has the best third player? That's one.
And we both love Kuzma. I mean, I love
two, who makes the biggest move before the trade deadline, because I told you guys, and Barry questioned me on this. Chris Paul's going to have a monster year for OKC, and he's not doing it to be a member of the Thunder. He's doing it so that some team realizes he's still got plenty left in the tank, so he can get on that stage and he can get with the team one more time where he can legit have a chance to win. And so far, so good, because he looks like exactly what I thought was going to happen is happening. And if for OKC, they win because they get picks and other things they need to restart the franchise, Chris Paul could very well be the difference between any one of those top five teams winning it or having no shot at all.
He's going to get his. He's going to get his, because he's without a doubt the most experienced, most accomplished player on that team right now, right? Isn't it fair to say? And so when we talk about Tillman Fertitta, who kind of took that indirect shot at Chris Paul, and he says these two are playing like a team as opposed to one player trying to be, I guess, a little too bossy on the court. And I guess he was referring to Chris Paul being a little too bossy over James Harden. Chris Paul's going to be bossy in Oklahoma City, yep, and he's going to get away with it. And that's the reason why you're going to see those stats inflated. But that's not going to be a fair evaluation if you're a team from the outside looking in. And I think if you're a general manager, you need to be smarter than that. And if he goes 100% with OKC, what's to say that hamstring doesn't pop off? I'm not trying to jinx him.
But here's the thing.
I'm not trying to jinx him, but
let's
be real.
If Chris Paul is the third option on any one of those seven teams, he stays healthier because he does less to achieve more, and he makes whatever team he goes to better than whatever that team has as their current third best option.
And that starts with Chris Paul accepting that role.
Sure.
I'm interested to see if he's willing
to. But kind of like you said with Popovich and LeBron, if you get the right guys with him and ahead of him that aren't going to tolerate that, I think James tolerated it too much before he did a lot of his bitching like behind the scenes instead of directly to Chris. I think that if you get guys that have been there, done that, and said, that ain't going to work with us, Chief, and or a coach that can do that, it'll go a long way to kind of dispelling all of that from being a big hindrance.
I do think it will help him accept that role, that third role, if the other two players, the two main players, are two stars that he absolutely has to respect.
That's kind of what I'm talking about. I'm with you. All right, so we are rolling through the show, already halfway through it. That means the halftime break comes now. The second half is around the corner. Plenty more to get to. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. Call that number. Text that number. Hit us on Twitter. It's The Usual Suspects, live from Twin Peaks on Kirby on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow. Live from Twin Peaks on Kirby, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey! 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show, it's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Listeners galore. Checking out, hanging out here at 59 Kirby Twin Peaks. Suspects,
yes,
all over the place. Shout out to my man, Dr. Dre on 290. Appreciate you. And, of course, the...
I just saw the cap, man. That cap was... the Astros cap that he gave you was
the Bun B
nice.
Astros hat is off the chain.
I saw him at the game. I saw him at the game. He couldn't have been more... He just walked around like a fan. That's the cool thing about Bun B.
Yeah, he's
just like everybody.
Fan.
Yeah, he's a diehard fan. That's number one. And he just walks around just like everybody else in the park. He's really cool about just taking pics and saying hi. And so is Mattress Mac,
yeah,
who I
sure.
imagine is a very nervous individual right now.
Is he or isn't he? Because he hedged his bet. So he knows if the Astros win it all, I think the guesstimates were around $20 million in mattress sales and bedroom sales. But if he doesn't win, he put seven and a half down or something like that? Or he could win seven and a half?
Well, he went to three different cities. It was either two or three different casinos because not everybody would accept his bet. So it was like, was it like $3 million, and then $1 million? Or was it like three and a half?
I think the one casino was, I forget if it was in Memphis or where it was, but they let him put it all down on one bet.
Right.
So.
Right. I mean, he was looking for casinos to give him the blessing to place the bet.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Mattress Mack don't play. The only reason why I said that, and I said it kind of facetiously, is that I saw on Twitter, it's like, man, people are worried about Mattress Mack, must be worried. And I remember you talking about him hedging his bet. So I don't think he's that worried. Plus, I feel like Mattress Mack has got deeper pockets than the both of us. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I don't think that's a stretch. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I think that the cool thing is he's so dedicated to the city, to being here, to the sports teams, that he's just – that's why he's such an icon. I said, with the, as just nasty as this mayoral race is in Houston right now, people think I'm kidding. But literally, if you wanted to see a guy that could win hands down and could probably get more done in a shorter period of time, then you just have Mattress Mack run for mayor.
Look, we've been talking – you and Barry have been talking about this for how long now? Look,
I started bringing it up before.
We were lobbying for him to buy the Rockets. He was looking for investors.
He wanted to. He was trying to do it.
We were trying to get him. We were lobbying for him to win it. Look, I'm not mad at Fertitta as the Houston Rockets owner. I just want to throw that out there. But we were definitely lobbying for Mattress Mack to get things together and own this team. So, look, I'm not mad at Tillman Fertitta. I'm not mad at Mattress Mack. Usually when he wins on big bets like that, what does he do?
Gives back.
He gives back to the city of Houston. Yep. So I'm not mad at Mattress Mack in any way, shape, or form.
So it'll be interesting. The Astros have landed in D.C., getting ready for Game 3. We already know that it's Sanchez against Greinke tomorrow night in our nation's capital as the Astros try to claw their way back into the series. So we'll see how that goes. A lot of you have been chiming in throughout the proceedings today on this show talking about Alex Bregman, talking about how you're upset with him and picking him apart and forgetting that he is – one of the main reasons why you are where you are, being an MVP candidate and doing what he was able to do this season. But, you know, you get the fair weathers and the finger pointers real quick when things aren't all sunshine and rainbows. And obviously right now it's not sunshine and rainbows if you're an Astros fan.
It's not. It's not. And if you weren't listening in the first hour, I told you that throw to first base that was off was, for me, the situation in the game where I felt like the Astros began to implode. And so I'm not going to sit here and single Alex Bregman out just on that one play, because I feel like there was so much good that he's done in the past for this team, not just in the regular season, but in the playoffs, to help this team win. How many times have the Astros won because of Alex Bregman? I'm not going to sit here and pick them apart because they're down 2-0 in the World Series. I'm just not. So there's a lot of blame that could be.
Let's start with the offense as a whole, because when you start talking about, sure, Correa had a walk-off home run, and he had a double, and he had another home run. But guess what? Other than that, he hadn't had a whole hell of a lot.
He has not.
Gurriel has hit it on the screws and put bat to ball in a lot of big-time at-bats, but he's got nothing to show for it because he's hit him at people. And you go up and down the lineup, and if your name isn't Jose Altuve, if you're looking at guys that have hit for average, and you're looking for – some people were bagging on freaking Michael Brantley because he's got 14 hits and 13 of them are singles. Guess what? At least he's getting on base.
And I tell you what, I'm with you on Altuve, but boy, if this game was competitive, if last night's game was competitive, how much would we be talking about Jose Altuve trying to steal third and getting picked off? Like, how much would that? Like, if it was a close game, like if the Astros had lost by one run, Jose Altuve would be getting the business. He was getting the business when he made the attempt.
Think about it, Nick, though, because that inning ends for Houston with a Bregman 2-run home run. If Altuve doesn't get thrown out stealing, you're up 3-2. Now you got a different scenario when you give up the Suzuki home run. Because of the fact, and maybe A.J. Hinch would have managed it differently. Maybe he wouldn't have. But instead of being down 3-2 with innings dwindling in terms of how much time you have left to do something with an offense that has sputtered throughout these playoffs, instead of being down a run, you're tied. And so everything changes. How Verlander approaches the next hitter, which he ended up walking, and he was ticked off with the umpire for that.
Sure.
Then he gets taken out, and then all hell breaks loose. It could have changed the entire scenario going forward if you had a 3-2 lead going into that inning instead of a tie game and then going down 3-2.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at the end of the day, look, there's a lot of things that the Astros did that were unlike the Astros. We talk about Bregman. We talk about how Jordan Alvarez has not been playing like himself through most of the playoffs. The Astros, for the first time in the entire season, had an intentional walk. there's things that are just going to happen that's unlike the Astros. They're doing things. Things are happening that's normally not happening to the Astros, and it's because it's the playoffs and the World Series. To single out one player and just pick them apart, to me, is just unrealistic and unfair. There's plenty of blame. In terms of a managerial perspective, where do you put A.J. Hinch in Game 2? Any mistakes, anything you should have, could have, would have?
I mean,
is there anything that stuck out to you felt like, wow, I wouldn't have made that move there?
The only thing that I would say, and I'm not going to pick him apart. My only thing that I would pick him apart happened before the game started. To me, the one lineup change, and I said it yesterday on the show, but the one lineup change I expected to see, and I think that he even showed it during the game last night, I would have had Kyle Tucker in that lineup instead of Josh Reddick. Josh Reddick, to me, is pressing. Josh Reddick, to me, is a guy that on every at-bat, the emotions. He almost hurt himself in game one.
When he threw the bat down.
Threw the bat down, it snapped right back up and hit him in the hand.
I thought
by the time he got to the dugout that he would be wincing because he did something to a finger or a knuckle or whatever. But I just think he's pressing and he's trying to do too much. Tucker this time seems to be more of a level heartbeat. He gets in there. He gives you good at-bats. He did strike out, but he fought for pitches. He made good contact. I'd have Kyle Tucker in right field. I really would.
I'm glad you brought up Josh Reddick because I feel like a lot of the reason why he's getting the playing time that he's getting is because of benefit of the doubt. They're giving Reddick the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to be honest with you, and I might be alone in this. I haven't been high on Josh Reddick all season, let alone what he's done in the postseason. I really haven't. There's been times and big gaps where you feel like, yeah, from a statistics standpoint, because this is how a lot of your arguments with Barry Laminack kind of happen, to be honest.
Wait, I argue with Barry? I have discussions, Nick. I have rational, mature discussions.
And it's really like eye test versus statistics. And I'm not saying y'all both don't understand both, but usually that's where the conflict happens. He's like, you're mad at this ERA, or you're mad at this, how many times he's gone on base with this many at-bats. Usually those are the numbers that Barry is going to bring up to you.
Even though the player has shown he sucks.
Josh Reddick may have some decent numbers throughout the regular season. I'm still not high on him. I'm just not.
And let's be realistic. In all the different challenges they're going to have financially in this offseason, the first guy they're going to try and unload, if anybody will take him, is Josh Reddick. He's got 1 year at about $15 million left on his deal. And if you can unload that money and Kyle Tucker can be your consistent, everyday right fielder, then you don't – offensively you gain. Defensively you may lose some things. But overall I think you're going to be okay because you have too many other players you have to worry about signing, especially now a guy like Will Harris who you thought – wasn't going to be a big deal in the offseason, but because of the way he's pitched, you got to focus on it. You got to figure out what you're going to do with Gerrit Cole. You got to figure out if Grinke's going to be your guy for the final 2 years of his deal, or if someone might even take him. The good news about Reddick is he's got 1 year left. So if a franchise wants to get a guy that they can get short term and get some more out of it in making a move, maybe Houston sweetens the pot a little bit, but they know in 1 year he goes away and you get the money back, then you know maybe it works out for both.
I hope it's a situation, not because I don't want him on the team, but I think he has a role on this squad in certain places. That's why I actually agree with you in terms of Kyle Tucker. I totally would have been okay with that. But I feel like it might be beneficial for Josh Reddick to play the game of, let me get as much money as possible as I can from any of, like the biggest offer possible from any MLB team and use that as leverage against the Astros, and then the Astros let him get paid. Because look, he's already got a World Series. He's going to get paid. He may not get the paycheck.
If he gets paid, it's going to be somewhere else. The bottom line is the Astros and Reddick, for the time that he's been an Astro, for the most part, it's been a win-win. But they're done and they need to move on. And if he can get one more contract out of somebody, more power to him.
Fantastic for Josh Reddick, right? Yep. Like, yep. I'm not mad at that. I want Josh Reddick to get paid. And I'm okay with him being an Astro in certain circumstances. But this might be a time where you move on from him, let him get paid somewhere else. He's got a ring. It's not a bad situation for Josh Reddick, you know?
I've said this, especially when you're considering if there's a way you keep Cole. But I've said, obviously, if you could unload Grinke and you could unload 30-some million, which 24 of it is Astros' responsibility, that's where you start. But if you can't, you start with Reddick at about 15. You start with Joe Smith at about 8, and now you're in the 23 range. Then you start with a Colin McHugh at about 4.8, and you start adding these little salaries. And before you know it, you're in the ballpark of 30 to 35, and that's what it's going to take to be in the discussions with Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
And now you at least can compete because at the end of the day, it's going to come down to his personal preference. The money's going to be there from every team in the discussion, from the Yankees to the Dodgers to the Angels and hopefully the Astros. He either is going to feel like this is home to him and he doesn't have to deal with the media circus in the bigger markets, or he wants to go to his original home and go to California, and then no matter what you put on the table, doesn't matter.
I'm not speaking for you, but the vibe that I get is that you're not really high on the fact that Gerrit Cole could potentially become a Yankee. You don't think that's a big possibility.
I think if he goes anywhere, he goes Dodgers or Angels, because he's a Southern California kid, and that makes the most sense for him. And if he goes for the Yankees, he's got to cut his hair and shave his beard
right. And
do a lot of things that, no matter what, growing up a Yankee fan, I think, and being a Southern California kid, you don't exactly like cold weather. I think all those things, they can throw money at him, but I think more than money matters to him when he's going to make his decision for the next 5 to 7 years.
See, that's the part of your argument that I like the most, because I don't necessarily get mad when a really good Houston Astro becomes a Yankee. But Gerrit Cole, it's getting to a situation with Gerrit Cole, with an exception of that last bad game that he had, that it's becoming more fun to watch Gerrit Cole sometimes than the bats. He's that good as a pitcher.
Sure.
Like, it's that entertaining to see him get all these strikeouts.
But I ask you, Nick, next year, if you take Cole out of this equation and your 1-2 is Verlander and Greinke, is this team nearly as good?
No, because
I don't think so.
I don't think so, only because, look, he can't. We talked about it before. Greinke obviously cannot beat you with power anymore, and that's going to be a problem. But he's kind of been accustomed and used to that part of his career, and that's how he's going to get you
but
out.
It's night
but
and day
him
between,
as your number two.
As we've seen, it's night and day between being a great regular season pitcher and a great playoff pitcher, and we've seen what we've seen in the track record of Greinke. It's not been that great.
I don't know if we've necessarily seen a performance over the regular season that justifies him being in the three spot. I'm not saying someone should be above him, but like, he hasn't been playing like a three, like the third pitcher for this rotation. He really hasn't. He hasn't shown that yet. So it's going to be interesting to see. But if he has an unbelievable game in the World Series, are we saying the same thing?
We'll continue to talk about it. You guys want to get on the discussion? It's a good one, and we're kicking it around as we're obviously talking mainly about the Astros today, falling down 0-2 in the World Series. 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, hit us on Twitter. It's Nick and Joel from Twin Peaks. Come on by, 59 and Kirby on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
Is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow. Live from Twin Peaks on Kirby, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through hour number two, 3 hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We are not in the studio today. We are at 59 and Kirby. Barry out, Nick in. Always a good time to have Nicholas front and center.
It's been fun, man. The show, as always, it's gone by so fast. It goes by when Barry is here as well. I'm assuming it'll go by fast tomorrow.
Don't pander. Just be honest.
I don't really need a pander to Barry Laminack. He knows I hate him. He knows I will absolutely talk crap about him when he's not here. And then in his face, I'm nice.
Well, so you're two-faced.
I'm two-faced with Barry Laminack. But then when he's not here, I'm talking terribly about him. Everybody in the hallways at Gal Media know I can't stand him. I'm starving, by the way. Did you order?
I have not, because as Pink Valkyrie just told me, we have to order from the bar.
Yes, no one's going to bring us
there
food.
There is no extra shenanigans and catering to the talent today, that is for sure.
It's okay, because I'm going to go to the bar and order there, and she seemed very nice. And I'm going to stuff my face, as you and Barry would do on each and every remote.
Well, you should. I don't blame you for that. But, you know,
so what are you going to do? You're probably going to get something healthy, like with salad or like grilled chicken or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you going to go? What is it?
I mean, for an entree, I'll probably do the grilled chicken with steamed vegetables. That's what I would probably do.
Yeah,
grilled vegetables.
Definitely not going to do that.
I think it's, you know, here's the thing. We got promo copy yesterday to let you all know that this week the Twin Peaks girls are going to be wearing leather and lace for Halloween week.
I was so looking forward to
Pumped it all up, told everybody all about it, walked in, and not that it's a bad thing, but all the Twin Peaks girls are wearing their regular uniforms. And so I texted our promotional girl. I said, but the copy we read said, and she said, no, that's the right copy because it came from upper management. I said, well, has upper management walked into a store recently? Because I'm not. And then I looked at the poster in the bathroom, and it says, by the way, it starts tomorrow, the 25th.
Yeah, I would imagine that it was going to happen either Thursday or Friday, considering
Halloween. And
yeah, so I was looking
so
forward.
So come back. You come in tonight and you see us, you see the Blitz, you hang out, you see the beautiful Twin Peaks girls in their uniforms. Then come back for the leather and lace festivities and costumes that'll start the 25th through Halloween. And it gives you an excuse, not with your significant other, I don't think, but it gives you an excuse otherwise to say, hey, I need to go back. I need to see more.
Yeah, just don't be weird and do what this guy did.
You liked that, didn't you? I put that on there just for you.
This Florida man who, this guy at Target, he had some issues. He had some issues in Florida.
So normally you save the really weird stories coming out of a box store for Walmart because we know it gets a little bit, shall we say,
creepy.
Okay.
Perverted, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, just a...
Let's be honest.
All kinds of walks of life frequent a Twin Peaks. I mean, not Twin Peaks.
A Walmart.
A Walmart, right. So with that being said, I wouldn't expect it to be a Target.
Yeah, so this 20-year-old, I'm thinking when I see the picture, by the way,
yes,
that this is like someone, you know, midlife crisis, hasn't gotten any ass for about 5 or 6
wow,
years.
Wow, you said ass in a public establishment.
Hey, look, we can say it on the radio. We can say it at Twin Peaks.
All right.
So but basically, he's 20 years old.
Yeah, he's 20 years old. And would it creep you out if I just turned to you right now and said, Nick, what's your favorite character or stuffed animal?
I would say Frozen, the character from Frozen, for
I
sure.
I bet you would if you're a friend of Cody Christopher Meter, you would. Because Cody, at about 2 p.m. on a Tuesday in Florida, near, I think, Tampa, just decided that he would approach a display of merchandise featuring characters from the Disney film Frozen. And when he saw a quote-unquote large Olaf stuffed animal, he proceeded to place it on the floor of the Target and, as it says here in the article, dry hump the cinematic snowman.
Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. After he was arrested and detained, we can't even read this quote. But I'll start with the quote and won't end with it. Admitted to doing stupid stuff and admitted that he relieved himself on the animal.
I see the word you're talking about.
Can't say that on the air.
Sometimes you feel like a nut.
So you can say that on the air.
Sometimes you don't.
Smooth.
You're welcome.
Well done, sir.
You're welcome. The other thing was, amongst the other animals that he was playing around with, he had also selected a large unicorn.
Oh, see, I know what you're doing here. You're being an A.J. Hoffman right now. That's what you're doing.
No, no, I'm not. This has nothing to do with you, I promise.
This has everything to do with me.
I'm offended by that remark, and I don't resemble it. Thank you, because I don't want to be compared to him. Here's where I'm going with this. It's one thing if you are dry humping a snowman stuffed animal at a Target. But when you incorporate a unicorn, I believe that a unicorn has a unit that you incorporate that changes the dynamic of everything that's going on in that Target, if you know what I mean.
I see what you're spraying. I see what you're spraying.
I'm not spraying. I'm saying.
I know.
He's spraying. I'm saying.
I know. And he's 20. That's the weirdest thing about this.
I don't care what age you are. You're taking a stuffed unicorn horn and a snowman to town.
The only thing about this story that doesn't surprise me is the fact that it's in Florida. Other than that,
everything bad happens in Florida.
Everything weird happens in Florida.
Every story we read comes from Florida for the most part. Now, he was charged with criminal mischief. Booked into the county jail.
It's a felony.
It's a misdemeanor. He was released posting a $150 bond. He's probably going to go buy the... He could have bought the two stuffed animals for that, stayed out of the Target, done it in the privacy of his own home. None of this would be public. Instead, he gets docked the $150 after trying to go to town on the two stuffed animals.
So he's lucky because I'm not a legal expert, but I'm almost certain that criminal mischief is a felony in the state of Texas.
He might be in more trouble had he been. This is Florida. It's such a regular occurrence. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It does not matter.
20 years old. Cody, do something with your life, bro.
Stutes?
Nope. See, how are you going to put him in that same?
You said Cody. I didn't know where you were going with
this. His name is Cody Christopher Meter. That's his name.
So what you're saying is Cody likes stuffed animals?
He looks nothing like Cody. Now, that other gentleman that you pointed out earlier, he looked a lot like Cody Stutes. A lot like Cody.
Yeah, I thought Cody was here today. But
he even had the Cody walk.
From the SB Nation studio.
I feel like Cody gets picked on quite a bit, too. Especially when we were in Los Angeles and we were on those scooters. Boy, did he get picked on.
Yeah, I needed video of that. I told you. I was so mad at you for that. The fact that you didn't come back with video or posted video on that, I was so mad about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I told you it was difficult to shoot video while being on the scooter. You know what I mean? That I could have busted my ass, and I almost did. I had a bruise that was probably 5, 6, 7 inches wide.
I just keep thinking of Tommy Boy. Fat guy in a little coat. Two of the books, one to go, and the big boss man is in the house. Clarence is here. The suspect's lining up. You should be here, too. 59 and Kirby. It's Twin Peaks, and it lives up to billing. It eats, it drinks, it's scenic views. We're here till 4. Blitz here till 7. ESPN 97.5.
Well, hello!
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.